Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our next guest wrote a book that says we shouldn't just be recycling, we should be upcycling. Here to tell us what that means is William McDonough, author of the new book, The Upcycle, Beyond Sustainability, Designing for Abundance. In addition to the book, he's busy running an architecture firm and a business consultancy around some of these ideas. William McDonough, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much.
Can you define upcycle for our listeners, and how is it different from recycling?
Well, if you think about recycling as taking something like a plastic bottle and throwing it in the trash, and then it comes back as a bottle, that would be recycling because it's returning to its previous use. Most of what we call recycling is actually downcycling in the sense of the quality is being reduced, because if that bottle, which is might be combined with a polypropylene cap and a polyester body, becomes mixed with other plastics to become a park bench or a flower pot on its way to a landfill, it's losing quality in the process. It's downcycling it. So upcycling would be we get the bottle back and we say, wait a minute, all these materials on the label are different than the material of the bottle. These are cross-contaminants and so on. What if we bring the bottle back and then we upcycle it by leaching out some of the materials that were in there for catalytic reactions that were suboptimal?
So it's manufacturing things better in the first place. Can you share some real-world success stories of upcycling?
Well, it's really the notion that as you move forward, instead of bemoaning our ecological footprint as destroying the world everywhere we go and that we'll try and be less bad all the time, upcycling just says, why don't we adopt an attitude that the world gets better everywhere we go? So, for example, I'm designing a building now that has for the decoration of the lobby and the enjoyment of the people coming in the building in the future, the outside walls, two walls of glass, and in between them are butterflies are hatching on the bottom of shelves. And so as you go to the office for the day, you watch butterflies hatching in the lobby, and then on the weekends, the children can open the outside doors. And we have a ritual for Barcelona where the butterflies will leave and go out into the city and help restore the biodiversity of the ancient butterflies that are going extinct. So that's an upcycling of that local environment by restoring biodiversity and celebrating it. So the world got better because we had a nice lobby.
And I see that you and your co-author, Michael Brungardt, created the cradle-to-cradle certified product standard. I know you wrote about this in your previous book. And this is a certification system for products, for people who haven't heard of this. It's kind of like the LEED certification for green buildings, but for products. Can you explain a little more about what that is and maybe some of the products you certified?
Sure. It started as a private quality assessment for our clients as they moved to higher quality products using cradle-to-cradle thinking. And then we gave it to the public 3 years ago in a not-for-profit called the Cradle-to-Cradle Products Innovation Institute. I raised the money, and we put it out as a public good. And so cradle-to-cradle products essentially are in a process of constant improvement. And the five characteristics they have are, one, the materials are seen as either biological or technical nutrients. So we look at something and think, is this going to go back to the natural world, like paper or clothing, things like that, things that are in the biosphere? Or is it going to go back to the technical world, computers, cars, metals, plastics, and be reused? So there's two metabolisms. So we're trying not to let the computers contaminate the biosphere, for example. So we have biological nutrient or technical nutrient and careful design all the way down to the molecule. So they're for ecological and human health. That's criteria one, material health. Two is, do I have reverse logistics? Do I know how to get these things back to the soil to restore it or back to industry to revive it as endless resourcefulness in a positive way? Three, are we using clean energy, renewable power, other forms of clean energy that we're seeing coming in now? So we don't put carbon in the atmosphere. We don't have an energy problem on the world. We have a material problem. We have carbon, a material, in the atmosphere, the wrong place. And so carbon belongs in soil. So we have a whole way of looking at energy and how to do that. And we have very successful examples for that. And then water should be clean and pure. There's no reason for us to poison water with textile mills. We've done projects where we changed all the chemistry of the textiles, the dyes, the mordants, finishes, polishes. The water coming out of the textile mill is clean enough to drink. It meets Swiss drinking water standards.
Is it too optimistic a vision of what manufacturing can achieve in environmental terms? Because you say in this book that we should embrace consumption, that we just need to figure out a way to do it well. And I think you've been laying out a lot of details of what the criteria for doing it well environmentally would be. But some people might be skeptical of that and say, you can't really embrace consumption. That's inherently anti-green.
I know. It's kind of ironic, and we're having a little fun with that because, you see, you can't consume a TV set. So what we call, when we call people consumers, let's understand, you can consume toothpaste. And you might be able to consume a cotton shirt that can go back to soil. That's a what we call a consumptive product. But these other products are really services that you want to. You want to watch TV, not own 4,360 chemicals. So those materials can go into cycles, and we can get the TVs back, and we have new ways to put them together so we can disassemble them so quickly, and those materials can be reused. So when we talk about it, what we're saying is that if we're going to have new products, and we are, because I doubt there are many people listening now that have a telephone that's 25 years old. So we will have materials that we want to put in cycles, and you know, every 3 years, say in terms of your phone, every 5 years and 10 years instead of in terms of your car, every few years in terms of your T-shirt. Who knows? But we need to look at their next use. And if we've designed them so that they have great utility across endless usefulness and use periods, then, you know, we can celebrate those materials as something we can use over and over again.
And related to that, I saw where your co-author and you, Michael Brangard, and you wrote in Nature magazine that, quote, leasing and take-back systems in which the manufacturer recycles the used product are another way of making upcycling work, partly because they allow the use of higher quality recyclable materials that can take more wear. Companies already lease cars, you wrote, but carpets, traditionally laden with chemicals such as chlorinated pigments, which persist in the environment and are often toxic, can also have many incarnations, unquote. Really? You can lease your carpet?
Well, absolutely. I've designed some carpet with Berkshire Hathaway for Warren Buffett's company, Shaw, the largest carpet company in the world. And we've designed a carpet with a nylon top and a polyolefin, you know, plastic back. The top can be recovered and put back through chemical recycling to caprolactam to make new, brand new nylon 6 fiber. The back can be remelted and become new backing. And the material goes out to the customers, sits on their floors. And in 10 years, if you want to change it from blue to pink, you call up and say, I'm ready for a new carpet. And the company comes and picks up your old carpet because it's the raw material of their carpet company, and then replaces it with a new one. So the truck goes back and forth, and we're done. And so, in a sense, you're leasing it because you're saying, I want the service of acoustics, comfort underfoot, appearance, so on and so forth. And we can even design carpets that clean the air, which is pretty exciting, too. So we have all sorts of technical advances that happen at the same time. But now we've got 1.4 billion pounds of carpet waste in America every year. Instead of it being a toxic nightmare in dumps and PVC that could produce dioxins, it's continuous technical nutrition for our carpet industry that can stay in the United States because its materials are being stored on the floors of customers. And we get them back, and we have endless resourcefulness, so we don't have to go overseas or mine new materials.
We have about a minute left. I read somewhere that Cradle to Cradle has only certified a few hundred products, falling short of its original goal. Are not enough companies interested in creating products that meet the standards that you set in Cradle to Cradle?
Oh, no, we have many more than that. Now, we put it in the public domain, and we spent 2 years working on preparing it for peer review in the public. And so it's really a launch, and we're very excited about it. And we have big companies in the real estate industry, one which manages 2 billion square feet of real estate, saying they prefer Cradle to Cradle products. That will be coming out soon.
Does it need to be mandated ultimately by the government? Because otherwise you'll never get enough private companies to sign on voluntarily to make an environmental difference?
I don't know that it needs to. I think it can help people meet regulations around the world because it's such a high standard. But I think business will do this because it's the right thing to do. And it makes money for people because it reduces cost because you're using safe materials. You don't have a lot of extra expense around that. And it's part of the design that it's most effective and we can reuse it. So it has residual value, too.
William McDonald is author of The Upcycle, Beyond Sustainability, Designing for Abundance. Thank you very much for sharing your ideas.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.